We just make sure that it's at the right place. And...
That's 19, yeah, 19.
Yeah, we're going to go from 19, and then I'll turn it off after 33.
Okay.
So which number? Do you need to slow it down at all?
Which number?
19.
That's Maha?
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can just do it at the speed that they do it. I don't remember that I slowed. I've been slowing this down. We'll try it. Everybody ready?
Mm-hmm. Ready.
Mahavirya, Mahavirya, Mahashaktir, Mahadyutih, Anirdesya, Vavanshimanameyatma, Mahadvidvir, Maheshwasa, Mahibartha, Srinivasa, Satangatih, Anirudha, Suranando, Govindo, Govidampatih, Maricharano Hamsa Sukarno Bhujagottamaha Hiranyanabha Sutapa Padmanabha Prajapatihi Amrityu Sarvadrik Simha Sandata Sandhiman Siraha Ajodhurmarshana Shastra Vishrutatma Surarimaha Guru Guru Tamodama Satya Satya Parakramaha Nimisho Nimishashvati Vachaspati Uttarvi Akrani Gramani Srimanyayo Neta Samiravaha Sahasramurdha Vishpatma Sahasraksha Sahasrapat Avartano Nivrittatma Samvritta Sampramardhanaha Ahasambharta bhovani anirodhani dharaha Sukhasara prasannatma vishvadhik vishvabhukhyaguhu Satkarta sakrita samhurdhyanmurgarayano naraha Asankyeyo prameyatma vishitta Siddhartha Siddha Sankalpa Siddhila Siddhi Sadhana Vrishadhi Vrishabho Vishnu Vrishaparva Vrishodharaha Vardhano Vardhamanascha Vikta Shruti Sagaraha Subhujo Urdharo Vagmi Mahendro Vasudra Vasubhu Naika Rupa Bhrihad Rupa Shrivishta Prakashanaha Vajasya Grajyudhinara Prakashatma Pratapanaha Ruddha Satcha Karo Mantra Chandran Charvaskara Yudhihi Amritanshu Prabho Vanu Shashabindu Sureshwaraha Aushadam Jagata Setu Satya Dharma Parakramaha Bhuta Bhavya Bhavannata Pavana Pavano Naraha Kamaha Kama Kritkanta Kama Kama Pradaprabhu Yuga Vidrit Yuga Varto Naitamayo Mahashanaha Adrishyo Gakta Rupascha Sahasra Janantaji Vishwa Vishwa Shdinshesta Chitandina Rupavritana
We'll be going, I think we'll get to...
That was 34.
I know, but I think we might get to Ishta. Ishta has a day.
Oh.
And Vishishta, so we'll see.
Okay.
That's why I did that one. Okay, so let's go back to... Three or five. Hi, Viraja. Welcome. We're doing the Vishnu Sahasranama now.
Cool.
And I'm talking to Viraja. So we are going to start on 305, the 305 fifth nama, Vyaktarupaha. So please repeat after me. Vyaktarupaha.
Vyaktarupaha.
Soyam prakashaman tvat.
Soyam prakashaman tvat.
Soyam prakashaman Twat. Swayam Prakashamana Twat. Prakashamana Twat.
Prakashamana Twat.
Yeah. Say Prakashamana.
Prakashamana.
Prakashamana Twat.
Prakashamana Twat.
Vyaktarupaha.
Vyaktarupaha.
Stula Rupena.
Stula Rupena.
Vyaktam.
Vyaktam.
Rupam.
Rupam.
Asyeti.
Asyeti.
Vyaktarupaha.
Vyaktarupaha.
Okay, so Vyakta means that which is manifest. So Vyaktarupa means the one whose nature is manifest. And so in this, in the little vritti here, they're looking at this being manifest in two ways. Okay, so the first one, Swayam, Swayam Prakashamana Twat, because of being, Swayam Prakashamana. Prakashamana is a present participle, self-shining. So Swayam is self, Swayam Prakashamana Twat. Because of being self-luminous, self-shining, it is Vyaktarupaha. Its nature is Vyakta, is manifest because it's self-effulgent, because of being self-effulgent. Right? So since it's self-effulgent, it is its own experience, and so it's never not manifest. It doesn't require to be illumined to come into manifestation. It's always manifest because of being self-luminous, which is the nature of Brahman. Now he gives another meaning too. Stula rupena vyaktam, in parents, stula rupena vyaktam rupam asya iti vyaktarupaha. Here it says, stula rupa, in the form of stula, means the virat, the stula means gross. So the gross upadi, you know, the stula sukshma karana. So the stula upadi is virat, the physical world that's experienced through your sense organs. And so that's vyakta. This world that we experience through our sense organs is vyakta, is manifest. So because of being virat, because of being in the form, because of the one as virat. Sometimes now, this is just a little Sanskrit thing, when we use the third, the instrumental, usually it means by means of, even because of, it means with also, but and it has a sense of being an instrument of the action or accompaniment. Sometimes it's even used causally, because of. But there's another meaning of the instrumental that's called ittambhave. Ittambhave tritiya. That's ittambhave tritiya. What that means is that the instrumental can sometimes be used to show the nature of a thing. Mm-hmm. And so when it's talking about the nature of a thing, then you're not going to say by or by means of. Mm-hmm. So here, as the stula rupa, you know, because of being, because of having that as its nature, stula rupena, vyaktam rupam asya, for him, the form is vyakta, the nature is vyakta, manifest as the stula rupa, mm-hmm. in the form of the stula rupa. The physical world, right, which is virat. And so virat is manifest, coming into manifestation from the causal condition of the prakriti or the maya. So the maya, when you're just talking about maya itself or maya as prakriti, just that word alone, you usually mean maya in the causal condition, karana, the karana sharira, the causal condition, which then comes into manifestation as Hiranyagarbha, which would be the sukshma sharira of Ishvara, and then further as virat, so Hiranyagarbha, and then in terms of the physical world, virat. So when they say as virat, Hiranyagarbha is understood. You can't have virat mm-hmm. without Hiranyagarbha. Mm-hmm. So what it means is that Ishvara comes into manifestation as virat, and then would have as its subtle body would be Hiranyagarbha. So the vyaktarupa in terms of coming into manifestation would be virat, or the stula rupa, which would include the sukshma sharira also. That's one way of looking at it, Ishvara coming into manifestation and you're going into the unmanifest of vyakta. when Ishvara goes into Avyakta, it's going into the Maya Karma Sharira, the causal condition, which is Maya. And that Ishvara Upadhi comes from the causal condition of Maya to the manifest condition, to causal, to manifest. So the causal condition of Ishvara is just Maya. And Maya has its, is rooted in, or has for its being, has for its adhishtana, Brahman. So we have two states of avyakta. We have Brahman, which is permanently avyakta in the sense of never coming into manifestation. But it's considered here vyakta because it is always manifest from its own standpoint as consciousness. Whereas Ishvara, because of, when once you say Ishvara, you're bringing in the Maya Upadhi. So Ishvara goes into avyakta, causal condition, which because there's no jnanam from the standpoint of Ishvara, that causal condition is really just nirvikalpa samadhi, right? Because no jnanam. Where if the jiva goes into causal condition, there's just pure ignorance. Mm. But for Ishvara, there's no ignorance. So when it withdraws, then Maya is just there in causal condition, but no, without jnanam. So we say that would be similar or likened to nirvikalpa samadhi. So coming into manifestation, going into resolution, manifestation, resolution, but only in terms of vikshepa, not in terms of avarana. Vikshepa means that projecting capacity. Avarana means covering. For Ishvara, there's never a covering. The covering is only from the standpoint of the jiva. So this is vyakta rupa. When we're talking about, when we use this first meaning that Shankar is giving, is unusual. Because usually we're talking about Brahman as being avyakta, always unmanifest, because it doesn't come into a condition of manifestation. But when we look at it from its own standpoint, then it's always vyakta, because it's always manifest from its own standpoint. You get it? And then we can also look at it from the standpoint, because this is the Vishnu Sahasranama, which brings in Ishvara. So from the standpoint of Ishvara, it says stula rupena vyaktam rupam asya vyakta rupaha. It is manifest in terms of really a virat, right, which would be the stula, the stula, the manifest physical world that's experienced through your sense organs. But it also must include Hiranyagarbha, which is also manifest, right? So
does Maya manifest and unmanifest, or is it always there?
Maya is always there, but not always manifest. Because the projection, Maya manifests as Hiranyagarbha Virat. Right? And so when it's in its causal condition, we say it is unmanifest. Unmanifest doesn't mean non-existent. It means in causal condition. Right? But Brahman is always manifest from its own standpoint because it doesn't have any conditions.
Yeah.
Its condition is always self-luminous me. Okay. So it's just it's really nice to see this kind of broken down.
And when Brahman is always there, the Maya goes into unmanifest condition. What is that like with my Brahman?
It's kind of like, well, for Ishvara, it's like nothing. For Brahman, nothing happens. Maya is there, is manifest or not manifest. Ishvara is always exactly the same as self-evident, self-luminous consciousness. But the Maya Upadhi is cyclical, right? We always say, this is not something we can know. This is from the Shruti. And so we don't have the means of knowledge. Yeah, it comes into manifestation from beginningless time.
Okay.
Maya goes from manifestation to unmanifestation from beginningless time. That's its nature. And so in reference to Maya, we use these terms. Maya, when it's unmanifest, we say it's avyakta.
Okay.
It's not manifest in terms of Hiranyagarbha or Ishvara, in terms of Hiranyagarbha or Virat. And then it goes, it manifests and goes into unmanifest. When it's unmanifest, that's the Karana Sharira, the causal body, which is we just call Maya.
So there's not a speck on Brahman when he goes into unmanifest.
No, there's never. Brahman is a different order of reality. It's the Adhishtana.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
So that's where the basis of the different levels of reality really is.
Well, the basis of the different levels of reality is just Brahman.
Just Brahman.
Just Brahman as non-dual,
right.
Self-luminous, self-evident, doesn't require any pramanas, doesn't require another sun to light it up, so to speak. That's the Adhishtana. And then Maya, in all of its conditions, from causal to manifest, is the other order of reality that we call Mithya.
Okay.
We have two orders of reality.
So that's where the two levels of reality really break off at the Mithya. That's why Swamiji goes into only that. Basically.
There's Brahman, the Adhishtana, which is Satyam.
Okay.
Not subject to past, present, any change, ever. In past, present, or future, it can never be negated. That's Satyam. That Satyam Brahman is the Adhishtana of whatever is classified as Mithya. Mithya has no meaning without a recognition of Satyam. It's just, for you to even know, understand Mithya, you have to recognize what is its Adhishtana. Otherwise, for you, it will be real. Like if I experience a snake, until I see the rope, the snake can't say, oh, that's Mithya. Without recognizing the Adhishtana, it's not Mithya to you. Somebody might tell you it's Mithya, but you don't yourself know what that is. To know what Mithya is, you have to recognize the Adhishtana, and then the Mithya becomes clear.
Yeah.
Okay.
But in terms of the teaching, Brahman is Satyam. Everything else is Mithya. That means that in the final analysis, Brahman is the Adhishtana. Right? Of everything that is Mithya.
Okay.
One thing they brought out in Vicharasagara that I thought I liked a lot. In terms of the creation, we can look at the Ishwara Upadhi as Mithya, the whole Ishwara as Mithya.
Yeah.
But it's also the what we call Pratibhasika, the projections of the Jiva. Right, are equally Mithya, because in the final analysis, because both of them have only Brahman as their Adhishtana. Right? You can say like in reference to the rope, the snake, the rope is the Adhishtana of the snake. But actually the rope and the snake have for their ultimate Adhishtana Brahman.
Right.
And so that was an objection that was in the Vicharasagara, an interesting objection that was brought up. And Shankara said, that's for kind of the dull-witted.
That's kind of what?
That objection is for the dull-witted.
Oh.
Because they, even though that's true, and we use all these things as adhishtanas, like the rope to the snake and the post to the ghost, that type of thing, or to the man. We use these as examples for adhishtana within relativity, and they are. But ultimately, the Adhishtana of both of them, the rope and the snake, is only Brahman.
So there's the key here is there's two orders of reality we're talking about.
And your whole knowledge depends
upon... Only appears to be two levels.
There's two levels in terms of... No, there's two levels of reality in terms of the teaching. The Adhishtana. Which is only Brahman, and then everything else that exists within duality, all of Maya, including the Ishwara Upadhi, is Mithya. So for there to be self-knowledge, for there to be Advaita, the whole Advaita depends upon the understanding of Satyam and Mithya.
Yes.
Without that understanding, there really is no Advaita, and there really is no knowledge, because... Something out here is real, not Mithya.
Yeah, right,
you know?
So
this division has to be clear, even on an individual level, where you recognize your own being as Brahman, the Atma as Brahman, as the Adhishtana, of literally all experience, subjective experience, what's going on in your mind, in your unconscious, your moods, your emotions, all of that. Everything that is internal, and everything that is external. External only means perceived by your sense organs. Internal means actually that which is sakshibhasya. Sakshibhasya means it's different types of antikarana vrittis, all of which are illumined, all of which are mitya, and have the self as their adhishtana, right?
But they seem more real than the gross world.
That's the problem.
That's because of the body.
No, it's that, but there's another way to think about it, too. What makes the experience for you seemingly more real is when it's emotional. Yeah. Emotions.
It stays longer.
Yes. It stays longer, lasts longer. Emotions, as long as we call them emotions, once they're objectified, if they take on a different tenor. But as long as they're emotions, they overwhelm the buddhi. And so the buddhi is thinking out of that emotion until it gets a hold of itself. Once the buddhi takes itself back and objectifies the emotion, then the emotion becomes mitya. It becomes something which is objectified, something that you can come into relationship with. But as long as the buddhi is overwhelmed by the emotion, and the emotions are pervasive, that's the manas really pervading just by the nature of emotion itself. The manas is pervading the buddhi until the buddhi finds that little corner of reality, you know. The manas itself is not objectified, and so it is as though pervasive to the buddhi, which is then thinking, behaving, feeling from the manas, because the manas has pervaded it. That's why. And so your thoughts don't seem as real. Your buddhi doesn't seem as real because it is taking place within the manas. Because the manas is pervaded. So learning, one thing that we learn to do, especially with projection, because the nature of projection actually means that the manas is now so thoroughly overwhelming the buddhi that it's actually projected outside, you know? Yeah. So you're seeing everything out here through the lens of the manas.
Yes.
And so because that emotion is more real than the thoughts,
yes.
If you're suffering from a projection, it's almost like a mini psychosis. When you're suffering from a projection No, sir, I'm serious. It's like a mini psychosis. There has to be a little corner of your mind. So I'm not just talking about emotion now, I'm just talking about ones that's projected. There has to be a little corner where the buddhi has trained itself to be able to say, even though this is completely real and I know it's the truth, chances are it's a projection. Because there's nothing that when you're in the middle of it, there's nothing that will tell you that. So you have to say, even though it seems completely real, it could be a projection. That's the foothold. Yeah. And then when you have that little foothold, just through training, you know.
So that's why you're always saying there's always hold out a little bit.
Yeah, you always have this, it's almost like, what do you call that?
King's X.
Anyway, there's something that we call that. Anyway, that's always a little corner that's held out. You know, that through associative thinking.
Okay.
Because of associative thinking, you've trained yourself that when this happens, that happens.
What's the distinction between the manas and the buddhi in this case right there?
The buddhi is the one that can objectify the manas. So once it learns how to do that or has that, you know, automatic response.
But are they both thinking entities or?
No. Not really. The manas is more, it can be a thinking thought flow, more thought flow, not any type of decisive thinking.
Yeah.
So you can say, you don't really call it thinking when the mind is just generating one thought after another.
Yeah.
It's kind of an automatic process, or the emotions, you know, or the perceptions. They're just taking place. The buddhi is the one who comes into a thoughtful relationship with it. Even if that thoughtful relationship is backed by ignorance, the buddhi thinks it's knowledge anyway.
Yeah.
And relating to it from a...
But this overwhelming part of the manas over the buddhi, Is there always a tug of war there? I mean, it seems...
It depends. It depends on how strong it is. If it's not very strong, then the buddhi just automatically comes into relationship, which is, as you mature, that's...
Okay.
The buddhi comes into relationship with whatever is going on with the manas almost automatically.
Yeah.
It's only when something really deep or really that hasn't unconscious, that hasn't been really really worked with.
And you say what at that time?
Well, when it's totally overwhelmed, you hope you have a little corner.
So is the manas like a stream of consciousness?
It's a stream of thoughts. It's emotions.
Experiences that's kind of going by day to day, moment to moment.
Yeah, even perceptions take place in the manas.
Yeah. Okay.
But the perceptions are illumined and you come into relationship with the perception. You don't even notice that you're doing that. Actually, that's more the palavyapti. But when it's emotional, because it outlasts all your thinking and everything is taking place within the emotion has a longer, then it's harder. It takes some training, because especially if it's projections are so real. So that's, I mean, in therapy, when we're, as a psychologist, so much of our work has to do with projections.
And what do you say at that time?
You say it could be a projection.
So is that, I have just a little further thing on here.
Okay.
Because I keep seeing, because almost every time I heard Swamiji talk, anyway, he'd bring up the difference of the crystal, and often show it in a triangular form, and he'd show it was clear.
Yeah, that's different. It's correct, but when we use that example, we're talking about the upadhi.
Oh!
You see, like, the idea is this, well, this is a stock example that's used in the Upanishads. I mean, at least in the Prakarna Grantas. So say you have a crystal ball, he'll often use. It's clear, right? It's clear. But if I bring in a red rose, this will be usually his example. You bring a red rose behind it, the crystal appears as though red.
Right.
It's not red. Nothing has happened to it at all.
Yeah.
But because of the upadhi, the crystal is taken to be red.
Okay.
And so there needs to be a viveka between the redness and the crystal.
So that's why where the viveka fits into this.
Viveka. It is, because for an ajnani, why we call something an upadhi? Why do we even call it an upadhi? Because it lends itself to the ahankara, the I notion.
Of course.
Right? And so the I notion is the kind of the core product of self-ignorance, right? Because with self-ignorance, then the body, because of the sukshma sharira, because of the subtle body, so therefore it's enlivened with consciousness because of the subtle body, I can say, I am this body, I am a woman, or whatever, I am such and such an age, or I can identify with the prana, that's another upadhi, I'm feeling weak, I'm feeling sick, etc. It can be identified with the manas, with the mind. The ahankar can be identified with the buddhi. Right? So all of these things function as upadhis because I take them to be myself. The only reason I take them to be that myself, which is why they're called an ahankar, it's called an ahankara, means an I notion. An I notion. Because I take it to be an ahankara, that means I don't know myself. Once I know myself, these upadhis become mithya. Why we say the upadhis become mithya is because even with self-knowledge, the upadhi, whatever is an upadhi, still reflects consciousness. Right? It's not like you gain knowledge and all of a sudden this body has no consciousness. You gain knowledge, but what about the sense organs? They have consciousness, because you know the adhishtana, you know the consciousness in terms of its own swarupa, in terms of its own nature, these upadhis, right, have been objectified by viveka, differentiated from your own nature, right? So then, but they still are enjoying consciousness. So we say they're mitya, because you've recognized the adhishtana. If you haven't recognized the adhishtana, they're not mitya, they're you. Right? So you can say they're mitya, but that doesn't mean anything. Because mitya can't be mitya without a recognition of the satyam, of the adhishtana. Right? And so the ahankara is a product of a self-ignorance. Right? Just think, if there was no self-ignorance, the sense of the body, mind, sense organs enjoying consciousness would be there because the whole universe enjoys consciousness. Ishwara enjoys consciousness. Ishwara has the Brahman as the same adhishtana. So for Jnani, the ahankara is mitya, and the aham, the I, is Brahman. We don't say ahankara, it has Brahman for its, the ahankara has Brahman for its adhishtana, but I am Brahman. Remember, teaching, it doesn't say the ahankara is Brahman. If it says the ahankara is Brahman, you know, the ahankara, recognizing itself as mitya, recognizes the adhishtana as myself. You see what I mean? It's just a use of terms there. Yeah.
And this self-ignorance is uniform. I mean, it's a universal gift.
Yeah. It's beginningless. It's beginningless.
Yeah.
And everybody suffers from it until they don't.
So we're not really responsible. It's just how the condition.
That's exactly right. It's not anybody's fault. You at some point in your beginningless lifetimes, you become a mumukshu.
But it's important to know what Marjorie just said, that it's, you're not at fault over this.
No, and there's
conceit.
It's beginningless ignorance.
Every religion has some fault laying. You know,
I don't know if every religion does. I know Christianity does.
Yeah, there's like the sin, Christianity.
Yeah. The Eastern religions don't tend to have that. They have ignorance.
Ignorance, yeah.
Even all of the darshanas, you know, that we study, there's six darshanas. Darshanas means some philosophical systems, but they're really teachings that all are centered around liberation from suffering, all of the darshanas.
Okay.
Some of the darshanas are called astikas. Astika means they accept the Vedas as a pramana. And so we have six of them that we learn, you know, and they're basically the Advaita Vedanta is one, Mimamsaka, which involves an analysis of the first part of the Vedas, the Karmakanda. Then we have the Sankhya and the Yoga, Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya is the philosophical system. Yoga is the means for realizing it. So Sankhya Yoga go together. Then we have the Nyayayikas. The Nyayayikas are the logicians. And the Vaisheshikas are kind of the Nyaya and Vaisheshika go together. Nyaya is primarily logic, and the Vaisheshika has to do with the nature of the manifestation of creation and how that works, and it reduces everything into atoms. So those are the six. So those are the six shed darshanas. They're all astikas. They all accept the Vedas as a pramana. Then we have three others, and those others can be divided up into their own groups. One is Bauddha, the Buddhists. But there are many schools of Buddhism, but it's Gnostika. The Buddhists, the Bauddha, doesn't accept the Vedas as a pramana. Then we have the Jains, which is an ancient religion. And to tell you much about that, I have to restudy it. But the Jains are an ancient religion in India. They also don't accept the Vedas as a pramana. Usually their teachers, same for Bauddha, their teachers, the Buddha is the pramana.
Oh.
And in the Jains, I forget what they call them, there's like 12 of them, I think. Who are the teachers. They're the pramana and worshipped as such. And then for the Charvakas, they're the materialists. They just worship themselves. whatever I perceive, whatever can be perceived is the reality. Not even inferred. They don't accept inference. Mm-hmm. Only what I perceive. And so there's philosophies, and there's major teachers, but but really, they're just materialists.
It sounds like Donald Trump.
What would be the equivalent in Western philosophy for that?
No.
Yeah.
For the Charvakas?
Yeah.
Maybe scientific materialism.
Yeah, that's
true. Yeah. But they won't, the scientific method won't go beyond
what is
perceived. But they'll accept inference and all of that. So the Charvakas are really extreme.
Okay.
Just imagine not accepting inference, even though they're accepting, one of their arguments is you say you're not accepting inference, but you're accepting inference all of the time. Mm-hmm. You're just not thinking it through. There's so many attacks on them. But anyway, that's the point is that there are all of these different schools of thought. Like that are part of the...
A lot of stuff chases around in the head.
What?
It just stops a lot of stuff chasing around in the head.
When you're studying the Vedanta, especially if you're going to teach, you have to have, you don't have to become an expert in these, but you have to have a knowledge of them.
But you have to know
what it basically is, because just like right now in the Vicharasagaram and other texts, I have to go back and look at all of those schools because I can never remember them all. Mm-hmm. Because they're not, some of them aren't logic. They don't fall into the same logical progression that we're used to. And so it's hard to, you have to memorize it because it doesn't naturally. I've been teaching them for years. And I still refresh. Every time I teach the class,
I
go and I restudy it. You think that I would remember, but I don't.
306.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're going to stop here, these two. And I want to do a little bit on the Sanskrit.
Okay.